from the Mercy One Studio.
Making it personal with Bishop William Joneson on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.
Welcome to Making It Personal with Bishop Joneson. On today's show, we're visiting with George Weigel, Distinguished Senior Fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author and biographer of Pope St. John Paul II. But before we get to today's interview, let's find out what's on the Bishop's mind.
Well, good morning, Kelly. On this feast of St. Nicholas, did you get candy or coal in your shoes this morning?
I always have candy at home.
You always have candy, huh? Self-supplied there,
there,
huh?
You go.
Yeah. That, very self-affirming of you in that way. So, no, we love this season and the great saints that we celebrate throughout the course of the month of December. It's just really a feast that even though we're Advent, our expectation for the coming Lord, the inbreaking of those who kind of accompany us on the way. So St. Francis Xavier, tomorrow St. Ambrose, obviously patron of our cathedral, and we continue on through all of this. So it's really a blessed time to be part of all of these situations. Sunday night, I'm looking forward to being with the Drake students at St. Catherine's and first experience there. So one more experience on that regard, involved in many ways. We do remember tomorrow, of course, that it is Pearl Harbor Day and 1941, and so our thoughts and prayers with all members of our armed forces in that way, and those who experienced the recent shootings at Pearl Harbor itself, and also the naval station in Pensacola. So we need peace, and we only the Prince of Peace ultimately can bring that for us. And very conscious of the chaplain, Father Al Schmidt, who perished on Pearl Harbor Day, Iowa boy, St. Lucas, whose remains were brought back to Iowa a couple of years ago, and his great heroism as he allowed others, sailors, to escape the sinking USS Oklahoma. So that was a kind of profound moment. But many others who've offered themselves in that ultimate way. So then on the normal feast of the Immaculate Conception is Sunday, but our national patroness, so we always want to celebrate that and respect that. And we don't think of the obligation as something obnoxious to us, but we get to be with Mary and kind of delight in her presence. So I've been fortunate to be invited by Abbot Benedict Neenan at the Conception Abbey in Southwest Missouri, where some of our priests and other seminarians have been in their formation period.
Yes.
And I get to celebrate the main feast day mass with them on their kind of patronal feast day as well. So hope to connect my former archbishop, former abbot there, Jerome Hannes, as well. So kind of nice little things, and coming back to meet some of the Dominican sisters of Ann Arbor who are going to be in town on Monday night and these coming days as well. So many, many opportunities to celebrate, conscious as well, you know, kind of these days when we look to the ultimate coming of Jesus. The people of Duluth Diocese lost their shepherd here last week, Bishop Serba, who died suddenly of a heart attack. He was on his way to Mass for the Sunday of Advent. And so we are cautioned in the readings. We know neither the day nor the hour, as Archbishop Sample, his great friend, the Archbishop of Portland, reminded us. So So we know God's grace is continuing to work with us and transforming our hearts. And maybe I can find a little consolation that, you know, St. Nicholas himself, Nicholas of Myra, the famous story about him when he was at the Council of Nicaea, that pivotal council in the church's history in the 4th century, you know, that he was getting a little exasperated with the Bishop Arius, who was denying Jesus' real divinity, was saying he was a noble creature in this way. So at some point, the heated debate among the Council Fathers, he went over and slapped Arius. So for that, he got thrown in the clink for a night and kind of mellowed out then. So maybe that's kind of the grace he needed to become this figure of generosity and kindness and kind of stirring us to really keep this whole season in perspective and not just to fall prey to the sensory overload. It can be a kind of orgy, if you will, of sense input in this way. And yes, we are, you know, incarnate beings, but we look to ways in which we can help others to be open and not feel the chill of being neglected or ignored. And so for that, we're grateful to folks like Tom Primer, who reminds us that through conversation, food, and laughter with family and friends, he finds the presence of Jesus, or Deacon Bill Reicher.
Richer,
excuse me. Sorry, Deacon Bill. That not only in with your family, but in bringing food to the homeless. And so we have many opportunities to do that, including the No Room at the End tonight event sponsored by Catholic Charities.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we return, we'll welcome George Weigel. You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
Support for Dowling Catholic Sports 365 is provided in part by Ashworth Vision Clinic. With two licensed optometrists, Barbara Sheets, a Dowling Catholic graduate, and Dr. Todd Pedig, the Ashworth Vision Clinic team provides complete eye exams, contact lenses, glasses, glaucoma testing, and pre- and post-operative care. Ashworth Vision Clinic is located at Ashworth and 60th Street in West Des Moines, 515-440-4610, online at ashworthvision.com.
Thank you to Tumia & Sons for your support of Dowling Catholic High School basketball. Tumia & Sons is an Italian family restaurant with old country authentic Italian food. Enjoy the local atmosphere where you may even spot a priest, politician, or even Willie Farrell. Take advantage of Tumia & Sons bocce ball court with the kids while enjoying Tumia's homemade bread, pasta, and real Italian homemade desserts. Tumia & Sons is located on Southeast 1st Street, just south of downtown Des Moines and around the corner from Graziano Brothers. 515-282-7976. TumiaAndSons.net.
Welcome back. I'm Kelly Musher Collins with the Diocese of Des Moines. If only we had a I think we do have a video camera up there. I mean, people can see what Bishop Johnson's been doing.
It's not for public consumption.
Okay. Let me get that fixed, Jimmy. Okay.
Just moved by the music. That's all.
You're listening to Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. On today's show, we're visiting with George Weigel, distinguished senior fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, author and biographer of Pope St. John Paul II.
Good morning, Mr. Weigel, and I will call you George right away because we go back a few years. So thank you for making time for us. I appreciate this time, as you are many audiences who want to have a piece of you. So just kind of wanted to do a little bit of pastoral work here. I'm just concerned about you as a Baltimore Oriole fan that you are, a long time, going back decades. Was it kind of hard to see the Nats win the series here in October?
No, it's an act of Christian charity to welcome Washington, D.C. into the ranks of winners here.
Okay, very good. Part of the connection, but something that extends far back from since I've known you, is this Tertio Millennio Seminar, one of your labors of love for well over 25 years. Could you just tell the folks what that involves and why it kind of is something that you remain committed to?
Well, this is, of course, one of the things we've done together over the past two decades, really. This seminar is a crash course in Catholic social doctrine over 3 weeks, held in Krakow, the city of St. John Paul II. But it's also an experience of full immersion Catholicism for graduate students, whom the leaders of the seminar believe can be the leaders of church and society in the future. An expectation that has certainly worked out, if I may say, in your case, Bishop Johnson. And over the past 28 years of this, some 900 students have gotten a full immersion experience of the church, and I hope the intellectual tools with which to be the leaders of culture, economics, politics in their various societies. We've had students from probably a dozen countries in the program, mm-hmm. primarily North America and Central and Eastern Europe. And your contributions over the past decade as both one of our lecturers in bioethics and as one of our priest chaplains have really been invaluable.
Well, you're very kind, George. Thank you. That spirit of the city and that whole region where our colleague Father Raymond D'Souza says the 20th century happened in a way, and what does he mean by that?
Well, I think what Father D'Souza meant and what I tried to draw out in a little spiritual guidebook I wrote to Krakow called City of Saints is that all of the worst of the 20th century happened in and around Krakow, where some 40 miles from the extermination camps at Auschwitz-Birkenau, which you and I have walked through and prayed through together. This was the city where the communist usurpers of Poland's liberties tried to build the model communist town without a church. And somehow out of all of that came the great figure of John Paul II, who inspired the Solidarity Movement, which was crucial in the collapse of European communism. So there's a density of history in Krakow that is really quite striking. Now, as you pointed out to me 2 years ago, that history also happens at a kind of micro or personal level. You'll remember that both you and I visited the church where one of the new blesseds of Poland, Hanna Krzyżanowska, is buried. This was a woman who was a nurse in the 1950s and 60s in Poland, who was asked by then Cardinal Wojtyła of Krakow to start a ministry to all of those elderly and poor people who were falling through the cracks of what purported to be the communist medical system, which she did as a labor of love and Christian charity for many decades. And that's how she lived out her Christian vocation. So the city is, it really is a city of saints, the ones that most Americans know about, but also a lot of ordinary people who did extraordinary things by letting God's grace work in their lives.
Beautiful, beautiful. And I've continued to encounter young people here in the Des Moines Diocese who have had that experience of World Youth Day in Krakow, so I think many can make a personal connection with that City of Saints. That's not your only book. You have a new book out, The Irony of Modern Catholic History. What's so ironic? That's kind of an intriguing title.
There are two big ironies here. One is that a relationship, the church and the modern world, which began in the late 18th century, with a lot of head knocking, mutual anathemas being hurled back and forth between the paladins of the modern project, particularly political modernity. We think of the French Revolution. Who wanted literally to destroy the Catholic Church because they imagined it to be the single greatest obstacle to human liberation. And the popes of the late 18th and first half of the 19th century tended to respond in kind, hurling anathemas at the modern world. Yet somehow that relationship, which began so poorly, through the providence of God, evolved in such a way that over a period of 200 years, the Catholic Church ended up rediscovering the essential truth about itself, which is that we are not an institution to be maintained. We are a communion of disciples in mission, in which everyone is a missionary, and every place is mission territory. So the Catholic relationship to modernity, beginning very, very roughly, ended up with the church rehearing the Great Commission of Matthew 28, go and make disciples of all nations. That's a pretty ironic development, although we would say it's a providential irony. The second, you know, big irony in all this is that as the church was rediscovering that essential evangelical truth about itself, it developed a social doctrine, which you and I have taught in Krakow for years together, a social doctrine that just might help save this late modern and postmodern world of ours from collapsing into the kind of incoherence and fragmentation that we see all around us in American society today. So those are two big ironies, and the book, which is full of stories of fascinating people from the last 200 years of Catholic history, is replete with other little mini ironies as well. So I'll leave that for readers to discover.
There's the hook for our readers as well. So
the perfect Christmas gift.
Absolutely. So good. One of those figures, certainly many Europeans and others that you identify as kind of this mini profiles that you paint, is Cardinal Newman. And he appears in various ways, and obviously just recently canonized by Pope Francis here this past October. How is Newman kind of emblematic of some of these ironies that you've talked about?
Newman is an extraordinary figure in many ways. He was someone who I think never really wanted to be a public personality, and yet was a remarkably successful pastor and preacher at St. Mary the Virgin University Church in Oxford for many years, and then one of the great defenders and promoters of Catholic faith after his conversion to Catholicism. Newman made Catholicism make sense to educated people in the English-speaking world, perhaps in a way that no one else did in the 19th century. This was a time when, you know, a lot of people with degrees imagined that science could explain everything, that humanity had outgrown its, quote, need, unquote, for religion, for religious faith. And Newman, without really raising his voice in a polemical way, calmly and elegantly explained why Christian faith makes sense and why it makes sense as a source of human liberation. And how it makes sense intellectually. Newman understood the church was in a different cultural situation in the late 19th century than it had been, say, in the 14th century or the 13th century, and the new tools for explaining the faith were needed. So we begin to see this turn into a more confident church aiming to convert modern culture in figures like Newman and the man who made him a cardinal, Pope Leo XIII, who was elected in 1878 and made Newman a cardinal a year later.
Mm-hmm.
So it was great to be able, I was actually in Rome during the canonization of John Henry Newman in October, and it was a great moment for the church in the Anglosphere, and indeed a great moment for the church around the world.
Mm-hmm. And it would be the hope of many of us that university students could continue to discover him, not only through the many flourishing Newman centers around the country, including here in Iowa, mm-hmm. at our large Regents universities as well, but that whole spirit of kind of uniting faith and reason in that way in their respective disciplines as they go out, things that are there as well. One of the areas you also talk about, kind of what with John the 23rd leading into the Second Vatican Council and some of the fruits of that council, but then also maybe where, as much as the Council Fathers were guided by the Holy Spirit, such as the Gaudium et Spes, the Pastoral Constitution on the Church in the Modern World, that maybe there were things they didn't envision, and just kind of thinking about a kind of claim that you attribute to John Paul II, I think you're kind of paraphrasing him, as you say, but when it comes to valuing sexual love, the Catholic Church will see you and raise you. Will see you and raise you. Kind of a startling comment. What do you mean by that?
I mean that the Church takes the love of men and women and the complementarity and fruitfulness built into that far more serious than the Playboy cosmopolitan culture. The culture of the sexual revolution treats sex as simply another contact sport. We think it's much more than that. In his Theology of the Body, John Paul II went so far as to say that faithful and fruitful love between husband and wife is a kind of icon of the inner life of God, the Holy Trinity, because the Trinity is itself a community of self-giving and receptivity that is fruitful. That's a pretty high claim. That's more than Hugh Hefner ever claimed here, or the world of of internet sex claims today. We're not very good at explaining this, I'm afraid. Sometimes because we're afraid to, but we can't let ourselves get frightened by an increasingly vulgar culture, and what we lift up as the beauty of human love ought to be more and more attractive in a cultural circumstance that's getting uglier and uglier, and to which people are responding in increasingly violent ways.
As we think and mention even some of the shootings at our military bases in recent days here as well. So, but we have to be very candid and humbled as well as a church. You talk about Antonio Rosmini and the kind of the wounds that the body of Christ has borne at different centuries. But, you know, there are those who would say, well, the church has kind of lost some of its credibility or authority to speak to the great goods of human life, including human love and married life and things. You know, some would say, well, the church would kind of be like Zechariah and fall mute because it's lost its ability to speak to these things. And one of the comments in your book, the church makes herself more credible if she speaks less of herself and even more preaches Christ crucified. Is there a sense you think that the institutional church, we become too self-absorbed because of the kind of interior chaos or wounds that we bear?
I think we've become too timid, Bishop. We're a bit too hunkered down right now. And I think, you know, everybody understands the human reasons for that. A lot of bad stuff happened in the church that has come to light over the past 17 years. We have tried to deal with that bad stuff, I think, better than any institution in a deeply wounded society. And we need to have the courage and the conviction to say, for example, that today the Catholic Church in the United States is the safest environment for young people in the country, period.
Amen. And I want to conclude on a note of hope here, George, as our time is winding down. You and your wife, Joan, have three children, all of whom are practicing their Catholic faith. What's your hopes for your grandchildren going forward in this season where we look for hope?
Well, we hope they have a happy Christmas. That's good.
I'm sure you're doing, you finished all your shopping for them, I'm sure.
Well, they're all descending on us on either Christmas night or the next day. These kids are heading into a rough sea. I mean, there's no use denying that young people today are heading into a very difficult cultural situation in which to be a Christian. That's why Easter is more important than ever. Him whom we celebrate his birth at Christmas is raised from the dead by God the Father at Easter, and as St. Paul teaches us, that changes everything in the cosmos and in history, and that's why we go forward with hope.
Amen. And again, thank you, George, for your time, and again, the book, The Irony of Modern Catholic History, for those who still haven't rounded out their Christmas list. God bless to, you and Joan and all your family. Thank you, George.
Thanks, Bishop. Best wishes to everyone in Iowa.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break.
Thank you to Tumi and Sons for your support of Dowling Catholic High School basketball. Tumi and Sons is an Italian family restaurant with old country authentic Italian food. Enjoy the local atmosphere where you may even spot a priest, politician, or even Willie Farrell. Take advantage of Tumi and Sons bocce ball court with the kids while enjoying Tumi's homemade bread, pasta, and real Italian homemade desserts. Tumi and Sons is located on Southeast 1st Street, just south of downtown Des Moines and around the corner from Graziano Brothers. 515-282-7976. TumiandSons.net.
Thank you, Dental Associates, for underwriting Dowling Catholic Sports 365. With over 40 years' experience, Dental Associates is a group dental practice with the mission of promoting optimum health and well-being to all patients, providing preventative, restorative, and cosmetic dentistry for the entire family. Message underwritten by Dr. Kenton Gleichman, Dr. Steve Karbaka, Dr. Christine Mulcahy, and Dr. Ben Nagel. Dental Associates, addressing your smile, needs, and dreams. Online at DesMoines-DentalAssociates.com.
Welcome back. I'm Kelly McCollins of the Diocese of Des Moines. Great interview with George Weigel.
Yes, I mean, 16 minutes with him. One could easily spend an hour or more over a coffee or a pint or whatever, but appreciate him making himself available to us. And I think, you know, in this season of Advent, as we prepare to sing Come Let Us Adore Him, that spirit that Joseph Ratzinger mentioned, that God wishes to be adored by people who are free, and the things that we can do, you know, in the face of consumerism and everything else, that Jesus in his own simplicity and poverty just looks looks at us. He looks at us. He receives our look of love and wants to love us as well and to allow ourselves without pretension and in our own kind of poverty and vulnerability. So I think many reasons for hope today. And I think Father John Ricardo is kind of rousing us as he appears in the Des Moines area, including on Saturday night at the Iowa Event Center. So I think that a lot of people are going to look to him to kind of see how do we not only meet the world that is crying now, but to bring them reasons for laughter and joy and all of that. So thinking about the culture, and George can kind of point the kind of darker and murkier side of it, but the inbreaking signs of grace that we might see. And Kelly, you've got some things that's maybe kind of raising my cultural IQ again.
There we go. Yeah, so a pop culture moment. So a lot of people are familiar with the show. It's on Disney Plus, the new streaming service. I know you probably
don't. I haven't added that channel yet.
We'll teach you later.
You mean there's something else in cyclones.com?
Yeah. Amazing. Anyway, the show is called The Mandalorian. It's extremely popular right now. And this show is a spinoff of the Star Wars series. So you're of the Star Wars generation, right? I'm sure you're a big fan.
Talk to my brother, Tom.
Okay. So anyway, the most notable and popular part of The Mandalorian is Baby Yoda. Come on. He is adorable. My husband started watching the show, and I really was kind of reading or not really paying attention until Baby Yoda showed up. And then it got my attention. But basically, like all Star Wars movies, they have the elements of faith and good and evil. And so there's some articles that kind of summarize it well. One of the episodes is called The Sin, where this man called The Mandalorian, he basically gives up the child to get some materials to just improve his own life and walks away from the child. And later his conscience calls him, tells him it's not a good thing, even though it goes against his ways. So I don't want to spill everything because I'm sure
no spoiler alert necessary. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So check it out. It's got some good themes.
So does Baby Yoda already spout these wise sayings and things? Does Baby Yoda kind of speak like in Latin where word order doesn't matter? You just kind of string words together in a way.
He hasn't started talking yet. Well, I don't know. It could be a female. I think it's a guy. A male.
Yeah, we shouldn't assume these things.
There you go. He's cried like a baby a couple times. That's all he has really done.
Okay.
So far. Okay. But we're only four episodes in. So.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, and some would say we shouldn't be so binary about gender here, but I think George was kind of speaking to some of the kind of the beauty of the transcendence of the created order in that way. So reminder that we'd love to have people submit in these weeks of Advent in ways in which they've experienced Jesus by texting 515-223-1150 with the hashtag Bishop. Let us know.
All right. This has been another edition of Making It Personal with Bishop Johnson. Thank you to our guests and all of our listeners in Nebraska, Iowa, and Wisconsin on Iowa Catholic Radio and the Spirit Catholic Radio Network.
You can hear Making It Personal with Bishop William Johnson every week on Iowa Catholic Radio and iowacatholicradio.com.